Welcome to the Sons of Technology Clubhouse. Ditch your fear at the door, take a risk, and enjoy the ride with your hosts, Joe Marquez and Kyle Anderson.
Welcome, everybody, to another fantastic episode of the podcast by the Sons of Technology. Today, we have almost a continuation of our last show, which was about, you know, the idea that is there a sub shortage? Is there a reason why, or is there a reason why there's so many open positions in education to begin with? And we really said to ourselves, we need to do a whole show on subculture, on getting subs, retaining subs, giving a good experience for subs, but also on how teachers can create almost a turnkey solution if you find yourself having to miss class that your students don't miss out on. Because one of the big things is this: when you get a sub, you should not feel that it's more work to get a sub than taking a day off, right? Sometimes you just need that time off, right? Mentally, physically, it shouldn't seem that you have to work overly hard to get a sub. But also, you shouldn't feel like you have to play catch up when you return. You should feel like that what you've put in place of your students is a great experience, is a learning experience, and you don't have to play catch up. So how can we do that? So we have a great panel here to talk about ideas to create a great subculture in your class, your school, your district, and so forth nationwide. So let's go ahead and introduce our panel for today, and I'll go ahead and begin. My name is Joe Marquez. Currently, I'm Director of Academic Innovation for Q. You can find me in the Central Valley of California, and you can also find me in Palm Springs, March 17th to 19th for Spring Q, which is going to be in person. So if you want to know more about that, go to q.org/spring. And as always, my partner in innovation, Kyle Anderson. Kyle, please introduce yourself.
Good day, everybody. Yes, I am Kyle Anderson. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Anderson EdTech. I have a neglected blog at AndersonEdTech.net. I just have not had the itch to write much lately because of, everything that I'm sure everybody's going through. But I also have a book that is out on Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com through my publisher, EduMatch Publishing. It's called To the Edge, Successes and Failures Through Risk Taking. I would love for you to check that out. And then I also am on Peloton at Anderson EdTech. So if you are a Peloton rider or runner, you can connect with me there as well. So we have a couple of other guests with us as well joining us today. One I know for sure is new, first time guest, longtime listener. And I'm not sure if our other one's been on before. I believe she has. So we're going to let Kim introduce herself first because I think she's been on the show before.
I'm 99% sure I have. Good morning. I am Kim Vogie. I am coming to you from sunny Southern California, although it's California cold to me. And I am currently an online learning coordinator in a large district in the Inland Empire. And this is my 28th year in education. Really trying to embrace the virtual school right now for the people I serve, and as well as reach out to a larger community. I have a 3,800 member group on Facebook called Empowered Adventure. The ED on Empowered is the same as the ED on Adventure. And we talk pedagogy all the time. And I have recently written a book. It is due to be out. I'm 99% sure it's going to be at Spring Q with Joe and Kyle, and I'll be in that author panel is my goal and hope. And it's all about deploying EduProtocols, which are going to come up later in our conversation today as we address some sub issues and just trying to have great pedagogy, whether you are in the classroom that day or out of the classroom. And I will hand it over to a new friend, Andy Losick.
Hi, everybody. Yep, my name is Andy Losick, and I'm coming to you from, it was sunny here in Southwest Michigan. The clouds are coming in, very cold, currently looking at about, it's all the way up to 28, so I'm going to need to spend some time outside, but we've been in a deep freeze and a lot of snow lately. But I've been in the classroom 27 years now, and I'm an elementary STEM teacher. Before that, I think it was almost 16 years. I was an elementary technology teacher that we've moved over to into a STEM setup now. And this is a topic that really hits home with me because I'm at two different schools. I see 25 different groups of kids every week. And so subplans and that type of thing has been a challenge that I've kind of developed some techniques for. And while you all are at Q, I will be at McCall. That's Michigan's version of Q, about, you know, 5,000-6,000 person ed tech conference every year, one of my teaching highlights of the year. And so it's on the exact same date. Sometimes they're opposite or whatever. And I hope to make it to Palm Springs someday. But really looking forward to getting back to our very vibrant Michigan ed tech community that way.
Yeah, we need to have a conversation between the leaders of McCall and the leaders of Q about staggering that schedule a little bit, because I've always wanted to go to McCall myself, and it is always the same weekend. In fact, I remember one of the keynotes that did McCall, they did their speech on, I think, Thursday morning, and then they jumped a plane and was in Palm Springs for that night to keynote the spring Q. So I don't know, Joe, do we know anybody in Q leadership that might be able to talk to McCall leadership to get this thing staggered out in the future?
You know, I think we can, right? And we could definitely do some swapping of the minds as well. I mean, I wouldn't mind hopping over to Michigan one weekend and hopping over to Palm Springs the next, right? So, you know, maybe we can get the executive directors together and maybe, you know, have this partnership of you're on this weekend, you're on that. I mean, I'd love it. I haven't been to McCall ever, and I'd love to check that out.
Well, we've done some partnerships in the past. John Carrippo led a road trip where he and Scottsy and a few other guys hopped in a motorhome, actually drove to McCall and were featured speakers at McCall. And then John and I, we put on the first Rockstar outside of California and Nevada, and we had Rockstar twice in Saugatuck, Michigan. So we have crossed over, but yeah, more collaboration that way would be even more fantastic.
Well, then we need to resurrect the collaboration. I'd be more than happy and willing to spearhead that, Andy. If you want to get us connected, let's do something. I mean, I think the more organizations partner together, the more educators benefit, right? So 100% believe in that. Speaking of educators, we're all educators here. We've all been, I would say, combined over 60 years of educator experience based on this panel, maybe even 70. And we've all seen our subplans. We've all had days where we just couldn't make it to class that morning. Something happens. We're sick. Maybe a son or daughter is sick and we have to stay home with them. There's reasons we get a sub. We've all had the times where we're like, it's just too much work to put something together to get a sub. I would rather come in feeling under the weather and just, you know, and just power through the day, because I can't risk my students falling behind, nor do I want to spend 4 hours after school feeling bad, putting something together for the next, I'm just going to come in. And so we are looking for solutions to making the sub experience better for the teacher so that they can take care of themselves, but also the sub experience for the sub, so that when they leave your class, they're like, oh my goodness, that is the best sub experience I've ever had. They write that little note on your desk. Thank you so much. Here's my sub number. Call me directly. I'll sub for you anytime. That's always the greatest feeling, because you know you gave a great experience to another educator. And so how do you do that, right? And so we're going to talk about some of our stories subbing, some of our experiences subbing, and then some solutions to have some turnkey ideas for that. Now, I want to preface this again. Teachers, if you need to take a day off, mentally, physically, you just need to step away for a minute, you should be able to do that. And you should not need this idea in your head, this little birdie saying, it's too much stress for me to take a day off. Or I hear this a lot from educators. I don't want to burden my administrators in having to look for a sub for me being gone. So I don't put a burden on them. I'm just going to tough it out and make it in. Teachers, you got to take care of yourself, right? You shouldn't have to feel that way. Also, we should always also want to make sure that our subs coming in have a good experience and our students are not missing out on education. We can't like let a sub day be a hit day. Like, you know what? We're just going to take it off as a miss. I'm just going to print out some random worksheet, some busy work for the kids so they don't bother my sub. Or I'm going to bust out a Bill Nye video and have a, they have to fill out this video sheet for my students. And we don't really need that video, but you know, it's something the sub can do. But conversely, we don't want to put like a PowerPoint or a Google slide in their hands and say, I need you to teach this on biochemistry for the students. You know what biochemistry is, right? Right, sub? I mean, we don't want to do that to the sub also. So what can we do? So I would love to just kind of go around and maybe listen to some history, some ideas, just maybe a story you have of maybe you subbed, maybe you had an experience with the sub. Just some ideas first before we come up with some solutions. So anybody out there, Andy, Kim, Kyle, whoever wants to start, just a story with maybe there was a time you wanted to get a sub but decided it's not worth it. Or you put together a great packet but the sub just didn't do what you asked them to do, or vice versa. Anything at all, I would just love to start off this conversation of what's some sub experience that that you have.
I'll guess I'll go ahead. So I don't know necessarily if it's about anything current, but I can recall when I was still in college and I would sub every now and then. I knew what district I was going to be student teaching in, probably about 6 months before my actual student teaching assignment. So I decided it'd be a good idea to do some subbing in the school district first. And when I say school district, I mean one school. It was a K-12 district. They were all in one building. Grand total, there was 350 kids in the entire district. And again, they were all in one building. So I would show up there to sub on a Monday morning, and I could be subbing for a social studies teacher in the high school section of the building. Then the next day I could be subbing kindergarten, or I could show up expecting to sub middle school computers and then just kind of bounce around where I would go cover a second grade classroom and then math classes. So I was all over the place. So, and that part was fun. But again, I mean, this was 2004. So you're talking now 18 years ago. And it was an issue then where you'd show up and some of the teachers had great sub plans. This is what you're going to do. And it wasn't necessarily expecting you to teach the actual material, because like you were saying, that's like expecting someone to walk into a biochemistry class and not know anything about it, but then teach the material. So it wasn't necessarily about teaching the material, but it was always laid out where there was enough stuff for the kids to do in an academic nature. It wasn't just here, throw on this Disney movie and watch it or anything like that. But then opposite end of the spectrum, you did have those classes where you show up and here, let's watch this movie, or there was nothing at all and you had to pretty much entertain them. Which, when subbing an elementary classroom, that was a little bit easier. Trying to entertain a bunch of six-year-olds is a lot easier to do than entertaining a bunch of 16-year-olds. So, but I mean, it's probably been an issue for as long as substitute teachers have been needed, is good sub plans versus bad sub plans. The other part of that I remember though is that there was a shortage of subs in this district because they were 30 miles from the nearest town. So you had to drive into the middle of nowhere essentially in order to go work at this school, but there really wasn't much incentive. So they paid $55 a day for subs is all. And at the time, as a college senior going into student teaching, I'm thinking to myself, you're going to pay me $55 to come out here. This is great. So I thought it was amazing. So, I would get paychecks from that school district because I was subbing 4 or 5 days a week. I was getting weekly paychecks of $250+. And I thought that was incredible because I was still working pretty much full time at Applebee's at the time too. So I was essentially more than doubling my income at the time. And when I was student teaching, I saved all that money. I was the person that we would go out on a Saturday night and I would actually buy drinks for my friends because I had the extra income to do so because I was subbing. So
you were the third leading industry in Marquette, Michigan at the time, I think,
essentially
right behind the university and the copper mine.
Yeah, pretty much. So, but at the time though, again, they couldn't get people to go out there because not everybody that could sub was a college kid that thought it was amazing. They were getting $55, because if you're an adult with children and bills to pay, $55 back then even was not a lot of money. And I think about it now with the district where I'm at now in Las Vegas, I don't know what the sub pay is. I know it used to be $90 a day. I think they've increased it, but that's still not a lot of money to go in and sub, especially considering a lot of the challenges we're dealing with right now. So it's just, yeah, it brings back fond memories, but it also brings back a lot of horrific memories as well. So, and we were kind of talking before we got going, is there a sub shortage everywhere or is it just in certain places? And I can imagine this is going on everywhere where it's low pay, it's tough conditions to go into, it's lack of preparedness, and not by the fault of teachers so much, because sometimes you wake up in the morning and you're not able to get sub plans together. It wasn't like you knew the night before you're going to be out and you could put something together. So it's tough. So, and I know there's been days where I had to stay out and where I had enough energy to call in and that's it. So lucky for me, I co-teach, so I don't have to put a lot together, but there's a lot of teachers where that happens and they can't throw something together. And it's not that they're being vindictive and don't want to prepare the sub if the sub even shows up. It's just that they may not have the time or the ability to do so.
Well, I'll piggyback on that. Talking about needing emergency sub plans. I was headed to school one morning and in the wintertime, and it was conditions were pretty good once we got over that 6 a.m. threshold of that's kind of the make it or break it, you know, whether we're going to have school or a snow day. And it was pretty good at 6 o'clock, but the wind started picking up. And so the visibility went down to zero as I was trying to get to school. And I got to an intersection and I'm like, oh, well, okay, going to give it a go. And I got 2/3 of the way through and here comes a F-150. I got T-boned. Luckily it just kind of spun me out and I went in the ditch. They were okay. I was okay, but car was totaled. But here I am 3 miles from school on my way in. And what are we going to do now? Because I've got a Ford Escape that's a bent in half and I'm not going to be able to teach. And so as I sat there and waited for the tow truck to come in, I was able to get Google Docs on my phone and I was able to cobble together some past sub activities that way. And so the technology was very helpful that way. But I realized that a lot of the activities that I had been leaving for subs were ones that my kids really enjoyed, that they were very engaged with. And so it, you know, it made it nice. Like those, that showed me that, okay, these are the exact type of things we need to leave for teachers. Because like you said, you know, whatever the circumstances might be, like, you know, I had kind of some sinus trouble the night before we were supposed to go back at Christmas time or go back to in January 2nd. And I said, oh, I better take this COVID test that's laying around. And sure enough, I was positive here at 8 o'clock the night before school had to come back. And so now I was like, okay, how am I going to, in an unforeseen amount of time, how am I going to lay that all out? And so, you know, having some of those go-tos, you know, we're able to do that way.
So I subbed for 6 months way back in 1994 before I got my first teaching job because I finished my credential the December of 93. And so you usually don't get hired mid-year, but and I subbed all elementary and, you know, the varying degrees of sub plans. And there was no technology at that time in the classrooms like we have today. And you'd get the long copious notes that told you exactly step by step. Or you would have the nothing. So I literally had a bag that I kind of had a day, you know, an elementary day based around like a picture book. And I took a set of copies with me everywhere just in case I needed to have something, you know, to entertain and teach kids if there were no plans. So kind of that bag of tricks idea that it's good to go, like, just insert that is kind of where I think some things that we can do now to solve this problem is going to be something really beneficial. But I do have to say, I subbed a couple of years ago. I was a technology TOSA in my old district and I got called to sub kindergarten, which is like not my jam, not at all. But when students know the routines of the classroom, and that's part of what I want to pose as a solution. When students know the routines, they'll keep that sub in shape because I didn't put the stickers in the right place. I didn't do the calendar right. And these kids were letting me know what I needed to do. And when we empower our students to kind of take over and know the systems and how things roll, we're in good shape. This classroom happened to have a slide in it. It was built in like the 60s. And in the middle of the room, there's this slide, like you walk up a big ladder and go down this slide. And it was a Friday. And this was a really special thing on Fridays. Everyone got to go down the slide. And I didn't know if they were yanking my chain or really telling me the truth about this. And so anyway, you just have to, at that point, you had to trust because you're like, oh, well, I'm just here for the day, man. I don't know. And nobody was, you know, it was safe and we did one at a time and blah, blah. But as a sub, you have a little panic in your heart. And now I was a district employee, so I was fine with all that. But I imagine just coming in there and getting paid $100, $150 for the day. And you're like, sure, I don't know. I mean, there's a little bit of a level of responsibility where you're like, I don't know if that's out of my scope of what I should be taking care of here. So in the end, were the kids safe? And that's the biggest thing, of course, is ensuring that students are safe and that everyone got to the, if there were a busser or a got in the car line in kindergarten, you know. So we can absolutely put some things into place, I think, that would be helpful to our K-12 teachers and for the subs so that they don't have that feeling of, am I doing the right thing? So.
No, I agree 100%. Well, number one, with the kindergarten statement, because I've had many of friends right now who are TOSAs. They have been put into a kindergarten class to sub, and they are like, God bless those teachers. Because it's easy to say, oh, kindergarten teachers, face paint and numbers and colors. But it is like the beginning of these kids identifying sight words and it's a whole different beast. I love kindergarten teachers.
Well, and it's also tying wet shoelaces, which is just really, you know, when it's your own kid, that's one thing, but when you have to tie wet shoelaces, it's just really gross.
And why they're wet.
That's where I'm going. Yeah. Like I don't.
It's not a rainy day today. Oh, so anyways. I love hearing like everybody's origin stories because a lot of people started off as subs and myself included. Well, I started off as a coach. So I started coaching football for one of our local intermediate schools when I was a sophomore in college. And I continued coaching for that school. And they're like, why don't you become a teacher? Why don't you become a teacher? I'm like, teacher, I don't want to become a teacher. And I was studying to become a biochemist, actually. And I was working with peppers at Fresno State. And then I actually got an internship in New York to work on tomatoes. And I worked at this this laboratory at Cornell University. And I'll tell you, it was boring. Because you're just working by yourself, extracting RNA and do it's so boring. So I came back and they're like, how'd you like it? I hated it. I go, I don't know what I want to do with my life now. I can't work in a lab. And they're like, just start subbing. Sign up for the district, start subbing. And they allowed me to sub only at the junior high that I was coaching at. So it was great. I had a great sub experience because those teachers knew me. They left me easy plans, fun plans. I thought it was great. So when I got hired in that school, that's the way I created my sub plans. Oh, I'm going to create a fun plan for the sub so they always want to come back. But the problem was whenever I came back, the sub said it was great, but my students were behind. I'm like, oh, now I got to hurry up and catch up. And now we got to do this. And to make matters worse, I taught at a school that had block schedule. And so a lot of my sub plans were because I had to go to a conference. And so I would teach, and if you don't know what block schedule is, everybody listening, it's that means you have the same period on like Tuesday and Thursday, and then a different period on Thursday and Friday, or Wednesday and Friday. And so I would normally teach the same thing on Thursday as I did on Friday. So I would teach on Thursday, but have to be gone on Friday, and my students on Friday would miss out on what I gave on Thursday. So coming back on Monday, everybody was in a different spot and it drove me nuts. I'm like, I have to figure out a way to get my students what I did on Thursday, give it to them on Friday. And so as Andy was talking about technology, right? And so I go, wait a minute, I'm giving Nearpods to my students on Thursday. Why can't I give them the student paced version on Friday? Wait a minute, I'm giving this discussion with my students. Why can't I record it and stream it live to YouTube and then hand that video to them through Google Classroom and they can watch it on Friday? And so I was just thinking, all these things that I'm doing can easily be ported over into the digital realm. And so that started working out really well. And I said to myself, why don't I do this every single day? Because we have students who miss class every single day. I don't think there was ever a day that I didn't have at least one student absent from one of my periods. And of course, what happens when that student comes back? What did I miss? Here, I missed this. And you're going to have to reteach it to that one single student anyway. So why not document your entire day digitally in some way, shape, or form? And so if we did a video, Edpuzzle, right? With all the questions already embedded. If I did an article, Edgy, I do Edgy so the students who are absent can get in there, see what all the other students did, and be caught up right up to speed. Nearpod or Pear Deck, I would always screen record. I just started doing all that. And so when I had a sub, it was basically, I wrote down, students know how to get into Google Classroom. Students have their agenda. Students know what to do. Just walk around the room and make sure they're not playing games. And that's it. And I would have a seating chart, and I would highlight a couple students. If there's any issues, these students have been trained to fix the computers. They know how to fix Google Classroom. They know how to fix this. Just ask them. And it was great. And the sub was like, exactly like what we were talking about earlier. This is great class, great routines. Call me anytime. And it didn't take me any extra work the very next day because the students learned those routines. And it didn't hurt that I had a couple students who would have my a chat. They would chat me. I'm like, Mr. Marquez, Sally's not doing her work. And so I would chat Sally. Sally, I hear you're not doing your work. Is there a reason why? So I would still catch up with them while I was at the conferences and be able to chat back and forth, which was great. But when I came back, I was confident that they did not miss out on a day of learning. And on Monday, everybody was on the same page, and it just released so much stress following coming back from a conference. And I said, I'm gonna do this every day. And so I think routines, Kim, you were talking about that, is key. And have the kids run the class so that really the only difference between a teacher and a sub is just a different human being, adult human being in the class. And may not have the expertise in that subject, but at least a different human being who's just roaming the room. The kids run the rest of that class.
Well, Andy, I think that comes back to,
can add to that.
Well, that comes back to one word there, two actually, community and culture. You know, even in that kindergarten room, that culture had been firmly established, and you have a community of leaders there, and that's essential. You know, we're all, you know, I guess fans, you could say, but we're all practitioners of edgy protocols. And as much as there's the Iron Chef and there's thin slides and all that, huge part of edgy protocols is that smart start. And we have made that an essential part of our STEM class. And, you know, that's the biggest thing for me when I lead those sub plans, as I often put, you know, play up the fact that you are new here and the kids have done this before, and really, you know, rely on them and depend on them to make sure this stuff runs right. You know, as John Carrippo says about culture, you either establish that culture or you just roll the dice. And so, you know, whatever time you spend at the beginning of the year establishing that culture, or year after year, like I get to see the same kids from kindergarten all the way through fourth grade, that saves you a ton of time on that sub planning and worrying about what things are going to be like, because you know that they act a certain way without being told that way.
So I went back into the classroom in fall of 2019 after being a tech TOSA for 8 years. And I established everything with Edu protocols. Like, I was going to town with it. It was awesome. And up comes my first sub day. I had actually broken my hand 2 days before school started, my right hand, 2 days before school started, and I needed surgery. And I had to just be out the one day to go get a consult. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm writing sub plans on like the third day of school. And I'm, well, I was typing, or actually I used Google Docs voice to type because I couldn't write, and leaving out, you know, all these steps because everything was new. Like, this is just awful. And the next night was back to school night, and I'm standing there with my broken hand and telling the parents, I'm going to have surgery tomorrow, which was a non-student day. And I had the long weekend of Labor Day to heal up. And I said, I'll be back Tuesday. They're like, but you're having surgery. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not writing sub plans. And I really was fine to come back because I was in a cast and everything. It was fine. But subsequently, any other sub days, like, you know, you have that, you want the day to be the same as if you were there. So you spend all this time writing out like every little step, and it takes you 6 pages of writing or typing to leave everything for the sub. And you're using a pack of sticky notes to label everything. And as we got more in the year of using EduProtocols, the kids, they're so smart. They're like, well, Mrs. Vogie, why don't you just leave EduProtocols for us while you go, because we know how to do those. And I'm like, oh my God, you're brilliant. And so I said, okay, how about this? You tell me which EduProtocols you want to do. And so they're like, well, we want a random emoji power paragraph. We want an Iron Chef, and we want, you know, 8 parts, whatever it may be. So I said, okay, great. Whatever I was going to do for social studies, I'm throwing into that Iron Chef. Our grammar was going to be 8 parts anyway. I'm going to change up the picture and the random emoji power paragraph. You guys are going to focus on the positives. And in like less than an hour, easily, and very little prep because the masters are already made. If I send them out digitally, we're good. I know some schools don't want subs using the technology, so you have to, you know, maybe pivot and run a few copies off for that. But many of the EduProtocols can be done paper pencil. And so you still get that same effect, and the kids still know the routine. And the sub wrote me a letter. She's like, oh my gosh, the kids didn't even need me. I was here just answering a few questions and making sure they were safe. And I'm like, that's what I wanted you to do. They knew what to do. And it was like glorious. And so that's where I'm just like all about the EduProtocol being good for kids, good for teachers, and now good for subs. Imagine if your school embraced EduProtocols as creating a school culture then. So even if you have to go cover for a teacher, which is happening now all the time. Teachers are having to cover for each other during the pandemic. You go cover and you're like, okay, I'm going to throw in a random emoji power paragraph. We've practiced some writing. We did not have an academic loss today. And you train your subs in the EduProtocols. And then like, it's such a win to have everybody kind of on the same page, but we're not on the same page, like where it's, I'm just on a script, you know, it's still got the 4 C's involved. We're still having some critical thinking and collaboration and good learning, and not just something out of a package.
Yeah. And I think one of the key things that you said, Kim, was training our subs, right? I think a lot of times you get a, you know, a sub pool and you hire them and they're basically just on call. You know, they just fill in, and you don't really give that extra training to subs. And I know in the district that I was in, when we did tech trainings and stuff, we opened it up to subs as well. If you're a sub and you want to come in and learn some of these things, you can, but it wasn't required.
It probably wasn't paid.
It wasn't paid.
You've got to invest in your people.
No, exactly.
You've got to go ahead and throw them a bone because
completely. You
know. and another thing is culture. Right. I waffle back and forth, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, because there's a difference between choice and having something that is, you know, almost turnkey in every school. And imagine if you have one school that says, we choose to use Microsoft products, and then another school, we choose to use Google products, and another school says, we choose to use all the Apple products. And you have subs who are going to all these different schools. They're not trained in all of these, and they don't know. Right. You know, do you think that if a school district chose a pathway, like we're going to use this LMS across the district, we're going to use this ecosystem across the district. Now you can decide how you use them, right? I think that's one of the great things about Azure protocols is it doesn't matter which ecosystem, you can still use them, but you choose how to use them. But do you think there's a crossroads between giving the teacher the ability to choose what to use and then also maybe a saving grace of having a district say, hey, we're all going to use this ecosystem because our parents will know what we're using and they can help their kids at home. Our subs will know what's going on so they can easily help in the classroom. And what is your thought on that, on kind of creating a streamlined system within a district rather than allowing too much choice?
Now, this is where the intricacies of the Nevada Constitution benefit me. So I think I mentioned it on the show before, but for those that don't know, Nevada is very unique in that the Nevada Constitution, written back in 1864, stipulates you can only have one school district per county. We have 17 counties in the entire state, so we have 17 school districts. Clark County, where I am at, has over 300,000 students. Esmeralda County, a couple of hours north of here, has less than 50 students. So it's crazy. It's nuts. It makes no sense in the world we live in today, but I digress. However, that comes to an advantage in your situation that you presented, Joe, is that in Clark County, and really the entire state has made cannabis the official LMS for all districts in the state. Now, there's a couple districts that still kind of do their own thing. Washoe County, where Reno is at, they always have to go against the grain. So while everybody's using cannabis for the most part in the state of Nevada, they're using Microsoft Teams, which also means that while 16 of the 17 counties are using Google products, Washoe County is using Microsoft products. So they're a little bit different, but for all 300,000 plus students here in Clark County, they're all using Canvas. They're all using Google Suite. They're all using Infinite Campus for the LMS. So there's no crossover or confusion in that regard. So now each individual school may have different policies on what other programs are going to be using. Like I know Class Dojo is really popular amongst elementary age students around the district, but then in high school, Dojo is definitely more elementary centric, where I would never think to use Dojo with high school students. That would just be strange in my opinion. So there's different ways to communicate with parents and families at the high school age. So that's an advantage for us, where I know in most other places that are not Nevada, like where I grew up in Michigan, it was my high school and elementary school was one district. And then there were smaller districts around. And I think I talked about this last episode, actually, but then you had like an intermediate school district that may cover a couple of counties around, where each individual district was their own thing, but then they all kind of work together. And then California, I mean, they break it down even further, where a town can have a secondary district or high school district and then an elementary district. So you have districts within a district. And then there's the County Office of Education in California. So there's a lot of different directives coming from a lot of different directions in a lot of places. So I have an advantage where I'm at because of our antiquated system here in Nevada.
Yeah, that seems very simple. Simple, right? I mean, because the district that I was in, they prided themselves on, we're going to have the ability to let the teachers decide if they want to be a Microsoft ecosystem or a Google ecosystem. And on the surface, that sounds great, right? Because the teacher gets to use the tool that they're most comfortable with. But then we had an issue because parents were like, I don't know what, because it was a junior high. This one teacher's using Google stuff and this one teacher's using Microsoft stuff and this one teacher's having me check the grades via this thing. And it was very confusing to parents. It was very confusing to subs, not knowing which teacher they were going to be in and what they had to do. So the way that Nevada seems to do it, at least it saves a little bit of that. But coming back to the classroom and creating something for subs, I think what Andy said and what Kim said, culture and routine, right, is absolutely key. And something you said, Kim, really resonated with me as well, is some districts don't allow technology to be used when a sub comes in, right? And the question is why? Why is that? Is it because the technology is used occasionally and they just don't want the students to mess it up? So one solution is don't use it occasionally, right? Have it be part of the routine every single day. Like in my science class, the routine became They walk in the class. I give them a high five. I give them a fist bump. They walk over to their computer. It's on the wall. It's numbered. Or they bring their own device. They have the option to bring their own device. They get out their device without me saying anything. I'm giving high fives. I'm fist bumping as everybody walks in. I don't need to say anything. They grab their device. They open it up. They go to Google Classroom. In Google Classroom, it's the agenda as an assignment. The agenda is an assignment. It says, welcome to today. This is what you're going to be working on today. If you have any questions about it, please make sure you let me know. Otherwise, mark this as done, as your acknowledgement of what you're expected to complete today. And they would mark it as done. And then the very next thing underneath it, guess what? A smart start for the day, right? So they are getting started. Smart start, starter of the day. And so while everybody's in and I'm giving the fist bumps, I'm walking around, everybody's at work. Everybody's doing their thing. And it's great. Right. And then, of course, I say, OK, what's next on our agenda? Oh, Mr. Marquez, you're going to go over the Nearpod on Adams. Perfect. Let's open it up. And then we'd go through it. And so that was the routine. So when a sub would come in, guess what? So it says students know what to do. They'll grab their device. They'll go to Google Classroom. They're going to mark the agenda. They're going to get started on the smart start. And I would always have a computer there for them that was already logged into the Google Classroom as a sub, and they can actually monitor everything. I said, but if that turns off, here's just a here's the agenda for the day. Just make sure the kids are safe and are not playing games and are not trying to pull one over on you, because they are eighth graders and that will happen. And it was great because of the routine, right? And I think, like Andy, like you were talking about with kindergartners, the kindergartners know the routine and they're perfectly happy calling out any adult who is not following that routine. Right.
Oh, absolutely. They're their classroom posse right there. They a lot of vigilante justice going on in kindergarten classrooms.
Exactly. Exactly. So creating that culture, creating those routines, creating those activities that and I think people need to understand, like, an EDGE protocol is a framework. It is not a same thing every time, right? There's adjustments that can be made. It's new material being taught. It all depends on the students on how they're going to use it. It's not like a turnkey thing. It's a framework that the students have learned how to use and can successfully complete independently. And I think that's the key part to this. Do you think that, and I want to ask this question because it might ruffle some feathers, but it's all dependent upon how the district determines this. Like, Andy, when you took the test and you had COVID and you had to be out, you probably had to be out for a certain number of days of quarantine, what have you. Are there like COVID time off, or did you have to take sick days? Did they get removed? How was that counted for you or against you? How did that work when you had to stay?
To be honest, I don't know. In last year, anything related to COVID didn't count against sick days, but Michigan legislation has changed on how they're counting days. And so it might have cost me a couple sick days. Now, what was fortunate for me was that Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of that week were snow days. So they didn't end up counting either way, sick days. But that's the thing, right? When our teacher's sick, I think of two of my colleagues who had thyroid cancer scares and both had to have surgery. And one was a kindergarten teacher, or one is a kindergarten teacher, one's a first grade teacher. And I was just thinking about how scared they must have been, but yet they had to do all that prep and sub plans for running that community and stuff there. So going back to your original question, though, I'm not sure how that all, luckily I've been doing this for a long time and I'm rarely sick. So I've got quite the bank of sick days banked up. So if I lose two or three there, okay. Yeah.
Well, and I asked the question because I would never, ever, ever ask a teacher who's using their sick days to continue to do work from home. Right. I want to make sure I say that. But if you're
and our admin's been really good about that. I was at a middle school staff meeting the other day and their principal said, I was working, you guys know, I was homesick. I was working on this vacancy, but don't let that be the model. Don't feel like you have to do that. When you're sick, you've got to take care of yourself and you've got to get yourself so you can be back here and be 100% for your kids that way.
Exactly.
And so when you have, administration can make or break any building, right? And when you have administration like that, that is supporting you, our elementary principals are jumping in right now. Our middle school principals are jumping in and they're subbing full classrooms. So that helps everybody tremendously to know that when you need the time, it's good. You can take it. It's going to be covered regardless of how dire it may seem sub-wise for us.
And I asked the question because I've talked to some teachers who were out because of a positive test, but they had zero symptoms, right? So they felt fine. But some of them had to take sick days. And if you're taking a sick day, I mean, you shouldn't have to work because you're taking that time off. But some of them also didn't have to take sick days. Some of them, it was like COVID days that was built in. Do you think, and the teachers were like, I'm stressed because of all I'm losing that time in the class. I'm stressed. And they're asking, do you think I should be able to post assignments through the LMS for the students to do as my sub plans if I'm off? And my response was, if you're taking a sick day, that's going to be up to you. But if you're taking those COVID days and you feel fine, you're not sick, and it's going to cause you stress for missing all these days, definitely talk to your administrators to see if they'll still allow you to post the sub plans virtually and stuff, right? What are you guys' thought on that? Because some people are like, well, no, if they're making me stay home, I'm not going to do any work. But others are like, it's too stressful. 10 days away, I want to keep posting. Yeah. I want my students to keep moving. What are your thoughts on that, on kind of posting, almost still hosting the class from home, almost a reverse hybrid, right? Where, or a reverse virtual where the kids are face-to-face, but you're at home. You think there's a model for that where a teacher can work from home and teach a class where there's another adult just making sure everybody's safe?
Well, I think it needs to be a case by case basis because I know some other California educators who that became the expectation of them. Whereas, you know, if you're able and you're willing and you feel good about that, like Joe, you were talking about how you might be at a conference, but you're getting chats from kids telling you about what the climate in the classroom is and you're kind of putting out a fire here or there. Like I remember when I've been sick before. And I've been in bed and I look at my laptop and I check to see what results are coming in on the Google form that I left as an assignment. And okay, good. Looks like we've got engagement. Now I can relax and now I can take a nap here and try and get healthy. So I think it would be tough to make that the expectation, yet I don't think you want to restrict anybody that wants to still be able to kind of keep a handle on what things are going on, probably help you get better in some cases, you feel better about how things might be happening.
Yeah, I think there needs to be some flexibility in that as well. Cause I mean, if you're able to do the work, why not? So I had a situation about a year ago where it wasn't even me that was sick. It was one of my kids that were sick. I had to stay home with them, use a sick day and whatever. And I had an IEP scheduled for that day. And rather than me being able to log in, run my IEP, which was going to be on Google Meet anyway from school, I was told that because I had taken a sick day that I had to reschedule that IEP. And if you're in the business of scheduling meetings like that, it was a pain. Now I have to put in the work of contacting that parent saying, hey, we're not going to be able to do the meeting today, which by the time I was able to actually make that contact, I could have had the meeting. So that was very frustrating. And I didn't blame anybody under like directly supervising me or with me. To me, it was just a not good policy coming from higher up, which it made no sense to me. So, I mean, eventually I was able to get the meeting scheduled for the next time I was going to be in school. But still, it's like there has to be some flexibility in that. If you're able to do it, then you should be able to do it. So I just think that that's a waste of time and effort at that point in that case. So, and I was thinking about this a little bit too. Kim, you mentioned something a while back in the conversation about how putting in all the work to put the sub plans together and then wanting it to be like you're actually there. I'm sure there's all of us in this situation have also felt, if you've ever worked block schedule, where if you miss one day, you might as well miss the next day or do the exact same thing you left for the sub the next day with them. Because when you miss that one day, then you're playing catch up on stuff. There's like, it's amazing how much work piles up when you miss a day. And you end up, and for me in the past, it's been a lot of like, now I need that day to catch up on what I missed yesterday. So I'm going to use the same plans with the kids, but I'm actually going to be here for them. And I can be a little bit more effective than somebody that was in the class the day before. So I know that's really just out of context for this, but it was something that was like really kind of bubbling in my mind for like the last 20 minutes since, Kim, you mentioned that. So sorry to kind of divert off the path. So I'm going to
leave. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think, you know, one of the things that we often talk about is how kids need reps to do things. And if you left good quality activities, you know, like I've done that where maybe I'm out for Monday. And the way my day works is it's Monday. I'll see half of the elementary school. I'll see it goes four, then kindergarten, then first, then second, or third, then second, right? So I see one section. Next day, I see the other section in that building. I go to a new building and see the first section, second section, like that. So it's a repeat of four, which really helps sub planning when I have to be gone multiple days because I do it once and I could be out 4 days in a row, right? But like if I have to, like whatever I left for subs, like if I'm out that Monday, we'll likely do that on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday with those kids. And then Friday, we don't have enough time for me to explain how Friday schedule, but anyway. But yeah, it often gives us time to do those reps. And, you know, you can reset all of your kids that way. Just give them practice on things that you're continuing to work on.
No, I mean, I love that. I mean, it's the idea, Kyle, that you're talking about having the same, like on a block schedule, having the same thing on one day to the other, you know, that would be ideal, right? And then Andy, you saying you can do kind of the same stuff Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, don't talk about Friday, it's crazy. That's ideal as well. But again, it comes down to what Kim was talking about, routine and culture. When I started going to a lot of conferences, when I knew I was going to be gone, I laid it out to my students. I go, hey, when I am not here, that doesn't mean the learning stops. We're still going to do the same routines. You can still ask me questions, right? Instead of raising your hand, you ping me on the DMs, right? You still do that stuff. I told them, I may need you during class because there's a couple of times where I was, you know, teaching a topic at a conference. And I go, hey, you know, it'd be great if you can see me posted in my class right now and see the kids actually working on it right away. And so I did that for National Science Teacher Association, one of their national conferences. I did a Flipgrid session with Flipgrid. It was one of the first ones that Flipgrid did. And in the session, I said, if you want to know how Flipgrid works, let's ask my students. And so I went on to Google Classroom. I posted a Flipgrid. I said, hey, kids, I'm at a conference right now. The teachers are wondering how you like Flipgrid. And all of these responses started coming in. And the participants responded back and the kids responded back to them. They go, how did they do that? I go, they know the ping. When a new assignment is posted, they look, they see it. And they go, but how do they hear it with the computers in the cart? I go, they always have their computers out. That's the thing. You always have it out. You never tell the students, keep your pencil in your backpack until I tell you you need it. It's expected they have it out. And so the computer should always be out. And if you have that option, then when the subs come in, the students are taking care of those devices because they're always having it out. It's not like a special computer day, right? When you just have special computer days, kids get all excited and their sticky jam hands are all over it. You never know what they're going to do with it. But if it's just another thing they constantly are getting out and using when it's needed, that's when they take pride in their work. And it's not something that's, ooh, shiny, I want to touch it. It's my device now. It's my new pencil. Right, Kim?
Well, absolutely. And one thing I've noticed, almost like a technology backlash, after being on distance learning for a year, many of my colleagues have been told to kind of cut back on their computer usage in the classroom because kids had too much screen time, and their parents and the upper management don't want them on the computers. And I'm like, why are you taking the tool away that we learned how to use? It's almost been a regression back to low level work on worksheets, because everyone's like, oh, well, they had too much with the computer. I'm like, but the computers are real life. Like, if we're not using the tools the kids are going to use in real life, then we're not preparing them properly. My students had their Chromebooks on their desk all day long, but they only had them open when we were using that tool. Just like you were saying, you put your pencil away when we're doing the oil pastels. Like, that's got to be put away to work on the art project. And so when we weren't using it, it was shut, the lid was closed, and we may have been using a book or whatever. But when we needed to access the technology, it was there and ready to go. That was part of the morning routine, was getting the computer on the desk, not opening it, just having it on the desk ready for when we did need it. And so I'm really sad that there is this backlash against being like almost anti-tech, because people don't want kids looking at screens. But it's not like a single rider option where they're just interacting with the screen. If you're using something like an Edge protocol, let's say a cyber sandwich, I can read the lesson on a piece of paper or out of my textbook. I'm going to go on the computer and type up my notes. I'm going to engage in a conversation with my partner, and then I'm going to go back and type the paragraph. Or maybe I even have them write it by hand. I'm using it as a tool. I'm leveraging that technology to take those notes and learn that skill. And so I worry about that we might see more of that, and especially kind of tying the hands of subs not being able to use the technology. Now, I do see some merit in that, in the fact that if the kids are inappropriate with the technology, then it becomes the sub's problem. And you've got the kid going and doing the wrong thing in the wrong place at the wrong time. So that might be the stopgap of why they're telling subs not to use technology. But if we don't start leveraging this the way we need to, we're not going to create the kind of kids who are going to be able to go out and do the jobs that they need to do when they get out of school.
Yeah, that, again, it goes back to that culture. Right. Again, if you are only using the technology occasionally, the students, this switch flips like, ooh, computer. Yeah. And then they'll goof off in your class. Definitely goofing off with the sub. If it's something they use every single day, that off task flip switch doesn't flip because they're just used to it. It's there. It almost becomes a part of the desk. Right. That's the important thing. As we're winding down, I would love you to kind of give your last pitch of, how you can make it easier on you to do a sub plan, or how you can make it easier on the sub. Just your last quick little pitch, tip, trick, what have you, for a teacher going, okay, I have to do a sub plan tomorrow. What should I have done previously to prepare for it? What can I do today? Let's start with Andy. Andy, it looks like you're shaking your head like you have something to say.
All right, so for this, I'm going to go to the Greatest Hits album, where, and what I mean by that is, I'm going to think about what are the activities that my kids love the most, what are the ones they're the best at, what are the ones that are the most engaging. One of my favorite like old timer sayings is that idle mind is the devil's workshop. So as engagement is your number one behavior strategy. Hey, the sun just came back out as I said that here in Michigan. Engagement is your number one classroom management. As long as the kids are engaged productively, you're going to have fewer things to worry about, and your teacher, your subs are going to have fewer things to worry about. So I want to throw something out there that my kids are really good at, that they can get deeper practice in, and that they're going to be engaged with.
And nobody was ever engaged by a worksheet. So everybody keep that in mind of what Andy is saying. And if you're like, I have my binder of worksheets I can just hand out, nobody's ever been engaged by a worksheet.
Kim, the all-time favorite number one Billboard hit, though, is a zip line. I hang fish line from one end of the STEM room to the other. I give each group a tub of Legos, and they have to build something that goes down to the zip line and go through that engineering process. And I mean, I could run to the store during a kindergarten class and come back and things would be fine. So, yeah, plug for the zip line there too. Engagement line.
Kim, what about yourself?
Don't leave the thing you don't like doing for your class. Don't leave the packet of Greek and Latin roots that you didn't want to teach. And also don't leave necessarily something new, because it is a great time for the reps and the practice. And I just I'm a big believer in edu protocols, and that's what Andy and I have talked quite a bit about and bringing those up. And they will make your teaching better and your student learning better. And so therefore you can have that go right into what your subs are doing. And it just makes everyone, like, it just works. After doing this for 28 years and trying every different thing under the sun and wanting to be a teacher since second grade, edu protocols are what allows me to be the teacher I always wanted to be, and allows my students to do the learning that they need to do with success. And so if it's going to work for me in the classroom, it's going to work for my sub and work for my kids.
Perfect. Kyle, what about you?
So biggest thing, leave something. Leave something for the subs for them to do. So just because you're out and you're not going to have to worry about something, somebody else is going to have to. So it's the worst thing for someone to walk into a classroom and have absolutely nothing and then try to have to entertain. So if you can just leave something, that goes a long way for those subs that have to come into your room when you're out. So I speak on that from experience as someone that's been pulled numerous times in the last month to go and cover classes because we are short on subs. And it's very tough to walk into a room where you don't know any of the kids, you don't know the routines of the room, and then there's nothing there for it. So something is better than nothing in this regard.
I need to plus one in here just a second. If you are a sub, grab these. Joe's going to put my slide deck in the notes for the show. Get yourself educated on edu protocols. You may not have access to the technology, but you could take a master copy and maybe make some copies if you walk into that situation where there are no sub plans and you need to have your little bag of tricks ready to go. Get yourself prepared for that and find some fun topics, because if something comes up short and you need a sponge activity, we got that. And we can do that, and then you'll be prepared for yourself, and then you'll be requested because you'll be like top of the heap when it comes to the subs, and people know that their kids are going to be left in good hands with you.
Very good. I mean, I'll tell you, one of the funnest times I ever had as a sub was in a fourth grade class. And somebody told me when I started subbing, always have a hook for the kids and tell them and give them something to work towards, and they'll work. And so I used to go in with a magic trick where I would bend a fork with my mind, and the fork would melt right in front of the kids and it would break. And they'd be like, "What is going on?" I go, "I'll teach you how to do this magic trick if you do everything your teacher has asked you to do today, and we have time at the end of class." And guess what? We never had time at the end of class, but they would always ask me to do the trick again. They would save the broken forks and put them in their desks. And I would always get a email from the teacher. "My kids cannot stop talking about you. And how come they all have broken forks in their desk? They won't let me throw away." So as a sub, edu protocols, yes, but also have a hook that will get the kids to work for you as well. Andy, you have something to add to that?
Oh, I was going to say that my friend Dave, his hook used to be, "I will jump up and touch the ceiling when we are all done if you're really good." And after he put his fist through an acoustic tile in the elementary school, he was, "We love having you sub, but please don't do that anymore."
That's fantastic. I'm going to close out by giving my advice. And I say this all the time for everything in education. Teaching is a collaborative sport. And if you're doing it alone, you are doing it wrong. If you have a great culture on your campus, that means you should have a very good relationship with people in your department. And if you have a good relationship with people in your department, you probably plan a little bit together. And so you have some common activities that you do. why not ask your partner, hey, I'm going to be out. I don't have a chance to do anything. Can you put some stuff on the desk, or can you, you know, the assignments that we do, can you have those ready for me? I used to work with a gentleman, fantastic gentleman named Pete, and we would share our Google Classrooms with one another. And if I had to be out, he would post things in my classroom as the teacher for me, and vice versa. I never had to worry because something was always in the Google Classroom. Use the technology to benefit you, to benefit your students, but build the capacity for your students to know how to use it and be, just good digital citizens while using it. That's key. And if you're just using technology sporadically, you're not allowing your students to build that digital citizenship capability, and there will be issues with this up. So you have to build that capacity. And if you have teachers that are always using technology, not always using it, but using it consistently, students become better and better and better at using it. And you're not going to have as many of those issues, right? We're a community of educators. We should be working with each other. We shouldn't be creating assignments in silos. We should be creating assignments with each other. And that means we have a giant archive of assignments created by so many of our fellow teachers that we should be able to pull from. We shouldn't be making everything by ourselves all the time. And we shouldn't be making things by ourselves and saving them for ourselves. We should be sharing them out with our community of educators so that others can use those as well. So I highly recommend that as your school creates a catalog of assignments that you have used. A great way of doing that is inviting all teachers into a single Google Classroom as teachers. And as you're posting assignments to your Google Classroom, double post to that shared classroom. And now any teacher can use that and push it out to their own. It just creates a great catalog for any teacher of any subject, of any grade level, to see what you're doing and go, oh, I want to use that too. And without any extra work, push it out to your kids. Sharing is caring is something I learned in kindergarten, and I still believe in that today. And I know all of us here on the podcast and a lot of our listeners believe in that as well. So even if it took you months to create an amazing lesson, it shouldn't take you more than a second to realize sharing that out is the right thing to do. And that will create just a better culture of a subculture, but also of teaching culture as well. So in closing, getting a sub, that could be difficult because you don't want to leave your kids. You don't want to create extra work. You don't want to create anything losing, but hopefully some ideas shared here, edge of protocols, different community building activities, different routines. This will help you in the future. Maybe not right now in February, but if you start creating routines now, then next year, that idea of you taking one day off to get a little bit of mental wellness or to catch up on something shouldn't cause as much stress. So EdTech Army, we appreciate you, appreciate everybody listening. And as a reminder, we do have our Flipgrid that we love our listeners to go in and proclaim that you are listeners of the pod and that you are a member of the EdTech Army, meaning you are taking education into your own hands, sharing it out and doing innovative things. And if that is you, we would love to see that you are a member and innovator of the EdTech Army. And when you do record those, we send you a sticker pack. So make sure you let us know that you've recorded that so we can send you a whole bunch of stickers. We have tons. I bought out Sticker Mule before they raised their prices. I did. Before they raised them from 19 to 29, I bought them out. So we have lots of stickers to share out with our members. But in the end, we just want you to know that we're here for you. Ideas and thoughts go out to you during this time. And if you have to take a day off, hopefully ideas here give you a little bit better peace of mind that your students will not fall behind and you don't have extra work to do. So have yourselves a fantastic February. And don't forget, March 17th to 19th is Spring Q. If you haven't signed up, definitely go to q.org/spring and sign up today. Because hotels are going. Have yourselves a wonderful, wonderful day.